Welcome back. Mike Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green, SaveYourLife.com, and the Master Gardener's summer sale is today, 9 to 1 o'clock today. So they've got all kinds of different things at their headquarters that have been donated, things that are need to be repurposed, reused, etc. And there's decorative things. There's books, gardening books. There's power tools, etc. So if you need something or just want to get out and do something, head up to the Master Gardeners. Their summer sale today. And as I said last week, keep in mind that there's a wonderful bakery almost next door. It's two blocks away. Atlas Eats, which is a restaurant and is in a very residential neighborhood. And it's just a small, 1930s commercial building that's sort of surprisingly in this residential neighborhood. So, again, about 2 blocks from the Master Gardener plant sale. I'm always looking for bakeries, and that's it's a really good one. So, again, 9 to 1 today. Stop by and support the Master Gardeners. We need that program to continue. And of course, like all the other organizations, it's a super challenging time just to raise a little bit of money and try to survive. So there'll be some great deals as part of their summer sale. Contacted me about slime mold, and this is something that shows up periodically in summer. It's the strangest thing. Usually I get a call or email or something about that some animal threw up on their mulch, on their landscape, because that's exactly what it looks like. And it starts out as this little yellow kind of, if you're, you maybe notice it when it's just starting. And then you come back, seems like just a couple hours later, and this clump is now, a foot across, instead of what maybe started out the size of a, the width diameter of a pencil, is suddenly a foot across. And you have the impression that at that growth rate, your whole yard might be covered and your house in a short period of time. But somehow it stops. It doesn't grow that wildly. It doesn't usually get much bigger than that. It's bright yellow, just really bright yellow. And then it will dry up and get dark tan brown and then be kind of dusty. And it's the spores from this slime mold. Seems to like mulch. And the spores may be dispersed that way. And so there may be slime mold spores when you get mulch. Or it may just blow in from a neighbor's. But that's usually where I see it. They must like wood chips. I don't usually see it in lawns or soil or other areas. Sometimes it'll creep into those areas from this as this clump grows, but it usually seems to like mulch. So it doesn't really do any harm. It's really disgusting looking. So what I often do is I'll kind of scoop out that section of mulch, go down an inch or something, and then and kind of just bury the slime mold in a hole, cover that up, and then sort of redistribute the mulch a little bit, and it's effectively gone. It doesn't seem to go very deep. It just grows its mycelium or whatever down into the I guess mycelium would be a fungus, but you can kind of see where it's growing in the mulch, and it's not very deep. So If you don't do that, it doesn't really matter because it's not like all those spores start growing and you have these yellow clumps all over your yard. It must be just certain weather conditions where it's humid enough and had enough rain recently and it's warm enough at night or warm enough during the day, and it will spark it to start growing. So getting rid of it, it doesn't really seem to change what happens much in your yard, from my experience. But it's so disgusting looking, that yellow stuff, that it makes you feel better to bury it and kind of compost it in the ground. Strange stuff, though. And I'm sure the master gardeners are getting questions about it too. Just pops up periodically, and kind of a fun name, slime mold. You can look it up and learn more about it if it intrigues you. But it doesn't ever seem to really take over a landscape. I've only seen a little clump here, a little clump there, and never really more than a foot across. But it does grow really fast initially, which is that's the disturbing part, because you kind of assume it could keep growing too. So if you see things like that, send me a photo. If you can't identify something, or plants or weeds, send me a photo, michael@saverlife.com, and I'll try to identify it for you. And as you start looking more carefully in your mulch and around your yard and in the landscape, you may notice some little cups. And by little, I mean kind of similar to what I said before, maybe the diameter of a pencil, maybe a little bit smaller than that. And these little cups have discs in them, which is kind of weird in a way. And there'll be bunches of these, usually in mulch. And these cups are a type of fungus. And this is the dispersal method that you're seeing when you see these. And what happens is a raindrop hits that cup, and it sends that disc flying, sometimes onto your house. And the disc is very tiny. It's, what it's the size of? It's bigger than a poppy seed, and smaller than, a sunflower seed. These are pretty small little discs, but they stick to things like houses, and sometimes you'll end up with these dots on your house. And usually you see those before you notice the little cups in the ground, which are, they're not colorful. They don't look, there's nothing to make them jump out at you because they're so small. But it's really kind of a fascinating dispersal method. And they can go quite a ways, these little discs. You imagine a discus thrower, when that water droplet hits that cup with a fair amount of force, and this disc is really light, it can really send it flying. So, I don't worry about trying to get rid of these. They just kind of grow in the mulch sometimes, kind of like the slime mold. But if you start seeing these little discs on your house, they don't come off very easily. They'll weather off eventually, but you could end up scraping some paint off if you try to scrape them or wash them off. So maybe take a look at the mulch nearby, see if you can find some of these little cups. But it's fun to learn more about what's happening, things that most people never notice, don't really care about, little niches that Mother Nature fills and just the sheer diversity of what you see in nature. I did see a fascinating photo of an ant that is in amber. I think they found this in Myanmar, which is, I don't know, like 60 or 90 million years old. It's a really old ant, and it has some kind of strange mouth parts, and it was eating another insect when it was caught in the amber, and so both of them are preserved in this amber for tens of millions of years. Really, other than kind of an odd mouth part, the ant looks pretty much like ants today. And it seems like ever since I left high school and was, you know, studying fossils and things, we've learned so much more about the dinosaurs, the old mammals, the creatures that inhabited the Earth at various times. We've found so many more fossils. We've learned so much more about, you know, feathered dinosaurs and just the sheer diversity of what was here. But it's kind of amazing to see a creature that looks so similar to what we have today in ants in this amber that's, you know, I forget whether it was 60 or 90 million years ago. It was a long time ago. I think it was the Cretaceous period that this ant was from. So if you run into kind of fun stories like that, send them my way. Again, michael@saverlife.com. Speaking of not identifying things, I helped a friend get some ragweed out of their yard this week. It was doing beautifully. It was one of the larger plants in their garden. And it's kind of a pretty plant. It doesn't have colorful flowers because ragweed is one of the plants that depends on the wind to spread the pollen, which is why ragweed is one of the most hated plants for those with allergies. Again, it's doesn't attract bees or moths or wasps or anything. It just sends that pollen into the air, and it's one of the worst in terms of allergies. But coming into bloom soon, and you kind of know that it's not the end of summer, but it's clearly midsummer as the goldenrod gets close to blooming. And I have some in my front yard. It's kind of migrated around our front yard over the years. And I used to have a cultivated variety of dwarf one, which just got shaded out eventually. And because it doesn't spread at all underground, it didn't have anywhere to go to find more sun. The wild goldenrod that I have has moved around and tried to get away from a couple trees that kept getting bigger. And it's in a couple spots where I probably should take it out. It's not that much of it, but I find the goldenrod really a fascinating plant. Even before it blooms, just the way the kind of the flower buds and things develop. I think it's really pretty. And then, you know, it's going to have some beautiful yellow flowers, and it's going to get blamed for allergies. So this year I'm being preemptive about this. I usually mention it, but this year I'm trying to do it in advance. Goldenrod depends on bees to pollinate it, and so it's not sending pollen into the air. It just happens to flower about the same time as ragweed and mugwort and some other weeds that depend on the wind to move the pollen around. So goldenrod is the showy thing, the showy flower, and so it seems to get the blame. for allergies. When in fact, there may be a few people allergic to goldenrod, but you're only going to discover that if you touch it. Because again, it's depending on the bees to move the pollen around, and so it doesn't waste them by throwing them up into the air. But you won't really notice the ragweed or the mugwort because they're green and their flowers are kind of green and they're inconspicuous. They're big plants, but they're inconspicuous in terms of color. And so the ragweed and the mugwort shift the blame to the showy goldenrod. So you should get some goldenrod. Nurseries carry it. Most of the cultivated varieties don't spread underground, or not very much. And it's a lovely plant. It's a great yellow, and I think you'd be amazed at the diversity of bees and wasps and things that come visit the little tiny goldenrod flowers. Very active plant. That and jopai weed. And sunflowers. Some of them are active places to watch all the different bees and wasps that visit them, which 99% of those will never sting you unless you accidentally grab one, or they're not going to come after you. But they are fun to watch, and especially around the sunflowers in our yard, which some of which are around 8 feet tall now. If you catch the sunlight at the right angle, it sort of highlights the tiny bees and wasps that are visiting the sunflower, and they're having territorial battles. They're zooming around. It's really kind of fun to watch. So if you have any of these plants, if you don't, you should get them. But goldenrod, jopai weed, which is just blooming, sunflowers, bring a chair up close to them, or I don't know, maybe I should try binoculars on these sunflowers. They're so tall, just to kind of watch what's happening, and you realize perhaps how many different bees and wasps there are, which are largely beneficial. Some of them lay eggs on caterpillars and aphids and things that we don't want. They're parasitic wasps. Many of them are pollinating things, not just goldenrod, but flowers in our garden and vegetables, etc. So, again, those are some of the most active plants that have this. They need almost a control tower to monitor all the things that are flying around them. There's hover bees, and it's a fun world to explore. Matt Kelly on the Finger Lakes, he works at Hunt Country Vineyards. I'm married to Suzanne Hunt, who's been very active in environmental issues. Matt has been very active with bees, and has done some videos, photography, also does the bee report, which you can find online if you want to learn more about the fascinating world of bees. He's a great resource right here in the Finger Lakes. And I've just been talking with him and reading his bee report blog posts. I've learned a lot and really come to respect bees and wasps even more. The yellow jackets give them all a bad name, but it's really just the yellow jackets that wreak havoc. Not so much right now, but September, mid-September to October, when they are really just foraging more aggressively, and there's more of them at that point. They really shouldn't give all the other beneficial bees and wasps a bad name. Also, another sign of summer, Rose of Sharon's are blooming. And I have kind of a love-hate relationship with Rose of Sharon. They're beautiful flowers. and some neighbors have them. They do tend to bend over with the sheer weight of the flowers, especially in the rain. The spent flowers kind of leave a mess on the ground or on the driveway, but they are a beautiful flower. They also seed themselves a lot, some of them, and I think in general, if you can find some named varieties, they probably won't seed themselves as much as the really common ones, but I've pulled probably 100 seedlings out of my backyard and dug out a couple larger ones that I just hadn't bothered with in a couple of years. And if I don't pull them out, we would have, you know, just an ocean of these Rose of Sharon's in the backyard. But it's, I kind of think of it as one of the quintessential midsummer flowers. So, again, I love how beautiful they are, but really wish they wouldn't seed themselves quite as much. So you can hold off some of that seeding and having to pull out little plants by cutting the flowers off. There's so many of them that I wouldn't do this individually, but when they're largely done blooming in another, I don't know, week or two maybe, then, and you can see the seed heads, which are quite large and really look like a bud actually. But they stay on the plant. They don't open up right away. And so you can prune off those sections that were flowering and basically cut your Rose of Sharon in half and just eliminate all out of those seeds that way. And if you have some other plants that just seed themselves too much, then you need to do some deadheading, some pruning, or potentially remove them if they're driving you too crazy. But often some fairly severe pruning will get rid of most of those potential seeds, and you can live with those Rose of Sharon for a few more years. It's really a beautiful flower, and there are quite a few different colors available. But if you get a seedling or someone gives you a seedling, that's likely to be one of the very common ones that will send out more seedlings. So it's one of those plants that you might want to purchase rather than get a free seedling from a neighbor that could turn into a minor nightmare as it grows. And they grow quickly. The monarch update, I brought over about 35 monarch chrysalis. I don't know what the plural is of chrysalis, but about 35 of those to Bricolo for their butterfly house and show some of the customers that come in. And I brought this bin in it's a plastic storage bin with a vinyl window netting, basically what you put in a screen for a window, but a vinyl instead of the metal, and all these chrysalis right on top, hanging from the top, and the customers that were in there were looking at it. It's kind of cool to see that monarch chrysalis so close. I've got a bunch more, and if you'd like one, email me, michael@saverlife.com, and I'll see if we can arrange a way for you to pick it up. I still have a few caterpillars. We seem to be in the middle, kind of a lull right now, where the third generation is the one that's in the chrysalis, and when they emerge, they will lay the eggs for the fourth generation that will, you know, eat milkweed and turn into a monarch in September. So I haven't seen any monarchs. Well, I take that back. I saw a monarch at Brocolo yesterday when I was dropping off the chrysalis. But I haven't seen many in our yard, and I haven't seen any eggs being laid. So again, it seems to me like it's like the third generation is growing up and will be emerging soon, and we'll see more monarchs once again, and they'll be laying eggs. And it gives my milkweed a chance to recover, because I had to cut a lot of it down to feed all the caterpillars that I had. I found about 110 eggs over the last couple weeks, and it's been fun to watch them turn into a chrysalis. Right now, I've got a couple that are hanging. The caterpillars will attach themselves to something. They're very hard to find out in the wild, because they go get off the milkweed plant to do this. And in the case of these bins, they'll hang from the vinyl netting or from the milkweed, but they hang in a J shape, and there's kind of a spider web, pretty tough attachment that they make to one end, and then they hang, and then they'll shake their skin off from the bottom to the top, so their skin will split open, and the chrysalis is already there under their skin, which is kind of a freaky thing, and they'll shake it off, and then the chrysalis will it starts out a little different shape than it ends up, and just a few minutes later it'll be in its traditional monarch chrysalis shape, and they'll be like that for a week or 10 days, and then they'll hatch, and that generation emerges in September, that one will fly to Mexico. So, again, I haven't seen many monarchs right now, but I expect we'll see more as this effectively third generation emerges to fly around and lay more eggs. If you have comments, questions, you can email me, michael@saverlife.com. And again, the Master Gardener Summer Sale, this is kind of their community garage sale at their headquarters on St. Paul Boulevard, just north of the Seneca Park Zoo entrance, is 9 to 1 today. Hope you can get up there and say hello to the Master Gardeners. We'll be back with For Love of Food, Discover the Finger Lakes today. Tomorrow, it's the Grapevine at 9 a.m. here at SaverLife.com. Have a great day.